This episode is brought to you by Bellatoris Publishing, bringing stories to the world that last forever.
Today on Faithfully Fantasy.
So this is like a storm coming. Because it gave me all the vibes when she was in parapet. Doesn't mean that they say something artificial. It's not something natural. It's somebody wielding a storm at this moment. And who could it be?
There's such a good reel by Dragons in the Detail. They suspect that Tan has been to this place in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm going to build on this and go as far as saying...
And Darna was angry as well.
She was rippling her scales of her.
Yes, that is the key. Violet was the one who made this lightning happen. She willed because...
Hello and welcome to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Onyx Storm.
I'm JC.
And I'm Sean.
And today we cover chapters 30 through 32. And just heads up, we use a strong language, express passionate opinions, and explore complex themes. So listener discretion is advised.
This episode will contain spoilers from all three books, as well as snippets of information we've had from Rebecca Yarros since release of the third book.
And before we start with the squad brief, quick heads up, you can now subscribe for exclusive content. Think early access to episodes, bonus episodes every month, and totally ad-free listening. You can even try it for free and cancel anytime. For the best deal, check out faithfullyfantasy.com, or if it's easier, just subscribe right on Spotify or Apple Podcast for instant access. And now, without further ado, let's get into squad brief.
This week, we pick back up with the squad on the Isle of Umbriel. The Unbrish army has no choice but to accept our request for an audience with the Queen. But they have to fight for the right to party. Or talk to the Queen. We watch Dane get knocked out, Zayden get pinned, and Viola absolutely own Marlys. But oops, she's actually the Queen. We finally get some silver-haired explanations, there's suspicious stormy weather, and we find out the cost of the Umbrish army. But is it a price we are unwilling to pay?
So we have so many things and there's chapters, and I'm not even sure if I'll be able to capture every single one of them, because there's so many questions that these chapters. And I might think that I got something, but not completely sure that we got absolutely everything.
Oh, you mean, like, there's just so much that happens on Umbriel?
Yes, like, so many lines that are just living there. And if you're not paying attention, you're missing maybe the real meaning or what other options are there.
Yeah.
All right, time for a history lesson. Let's dive deep and see what the past is hiding about the future.
Chapter 30.
Epigraph.
It is unwise to favour one god above another. Better to shun them all than to show favouritism amongst a jealous, prodigious pantheon. Major Rorty's Guide to Appeasing the Gods, second edition. So, is this a commentary that the queen lost the fight because she favours a god? Like, the island favours Dune?
Yes.
Is it a link to Theophany? Because she's going to die at the end of the book, and she, well, I don't know. She doesn't favor Dune anymore, does she? She kind of shunned Dune. Or is it a link to Viola and like a bit of the first kind of foreshadowing for the fact that Violet was going to be dedicated, but they didn't complete it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the gods are real characters, aren't they? Do we think that we will get backstory from the gods? We'll find out about their relationships between the gods and why they were jealous of each other and who was more jealous of who. Do you think we'll get further information about that in book 4?
You know, like maybe 5 months ago, if you ask me the same question, I would laugh. I would say, no, we're not going to see the gods. That is just not possible. But after all of a sudden happened in this book, I'm thinking that, yes, it's a fair chance that we start to see that maybe the gods are going to be there. And at some point we will see, I don't know, Dune or Malik. I'm not sure that all of them, but at least one of them.
We might already have seen them. We just didn't realize that's who they were. When we first meet Rhee, Violet says she is physically similar to the closest or the most modern depiction of Amari.
Mm-hmm.
Zayden has the wrath of Dune.
Yes. I know there's some theories out there saying that maybe the first six, the first riders, in the end, they get so much power, they turn into the gods. They are praying nowadays in the book. So I don't think that could be something that crazy, to be honest, because if you had that much power, and now we see as well the Venom, they can live for centuries using the magic derailing from the ground. So we don't know the first six, what kind of magic they were using. If they're using the magic directly from the sky, they had even more power than the one from the ground.
There's some interesting points about gods in this set of chapters, and we'll get to those. But there's one particular point where the queen says to Violet, the high priestess says to Violet, do you worship another now? And she looks at Tern. And then she looks at Zayden.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's something to do with the dragons, isn't there? That possibly the dragons overthrew the gods or something.
Yeah.
And that's why the dragons don't worship their puny gods. And perhaps the gods' life on Earth was ended at that point because the dragons took over. So we start the chapter with the squad having been woken up, or they were already awake, but the Umbrish army had sneaked up on their bait trap and they basically asked them to leave, but they don't leave because they want an audience with the queen. Violet says the soldiers on Umbriel are weirdly similar, like they're all exactly the same height, they've all got exactly the same haircut. That's normal in military that you have your hair like either slicked back as a woman or you have it shaved as a man. But why are they all exactly the same height?
When I was reading this, I was thinking that maybe if you want to be a soldier or part of the army of Umbriel, you need to have some physical requirements. So maybe the height.
Yeah, but exactly the same height. I get normally you'd have like a minimum height or like a maximum height for some roles. Maybe you need to be short. I don't know why they have to be exactly the same. That's a weird thing to say.
Yeah, for me, to be honest, the weirdest part of this moment is that the Sorangel says that the people from Umbriel, they're even like tougher. The people from Basgaiath, the training they do is better and tougher than Basgaiath. So they are really good soldiers. How can they miss like six dragons hiding between the trees when they're going to see this trap that Zayden and Violet have been put into these guys to find them easily? And it's just,
they didn't see them.
Yeah, 25 feet average dragon hiding between the trees or something.
It's really dark.
I give it that to Tern because obviously he's made for the night, he's made for the dark. But Sagel, Tain.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, so we have like this giant dragons like around and they didn't see
them. You know, though, they have this reputation for being fierce and brutal, but they've never actually fought anyone.
Hmm.
So what are they training for?
Yeah.
So they're not very good. Like, that's the thing. Because, okay, Dane lost his match, but...
Well, Zayden was about to lose as well, so... at least they're people who are like really high level. Yeah,
they were just like really big, weren't they? But they're not exceptional. They're supposed to be an exceptional military, but they've never been tested. They've been tested for hundreds of years.
Yeah. Because they've been trained to defend the island, but so far we don't know
from what. From what, yeah. So they're all pretty scared of the dragons, but they don't run away. One just wets himself. So I shouldn't laugh. I would probably do the same.
Yeah. This is strange because, and the book says, they're scared, but we have to say they didn't run away. Well, maybe they were so petrified they couldn't even
yeah,
move.
Yeah, like fixed to the spot. But then there's disappointment because the shock at seeing the dragons means they're not used
Never
to seeing.
Seen it.
They might have seen a dragon or two. Like people in the island, I think there is a big suspicion that there's been dragons there before.
Mm-hmm.
But these ones haven't. So not everybody has. And I guess what the point is that even if they'd seen them once or twice from a distance, Violet was saying that if the Irids lived there and they thought they were like part of the island, they possibly wouldn't be so scared. But at that point, she doesn't know that the Irids are peaceful. So they could have lived on part of an island, and maybe that is why they were fighting against the dragons. So they have the cross bolts that can go around.
Mm-hmm.
Violet doesn't know this at that point. So yeah. We know now that they're not on the island, but it could have been.
Yeah, something that caught my attention here as well is when Violet realized that the soldier had never seen a dragon, which means that the Irids are not in the island. And Darna, she got really frustrated about the situation. And Violet can feel all the frustration. She can feel how it goes through her body. And Violet is the one who says to Andarna, be careful because right now I can't shield here.
Mm.
But I thought it was more like a mental trick, something that you had to do with your mind when you start to build
this safe place,
that you build like the doors or all this kind of stuff that's happening in your head. So why she can't shield the power or the connection with the dragon just because there's no magic around?
That's a really good question.
I thought that maybe I forgot something that's crucial for this, but when Seida was teaching to Violet how to shield, everything was a mental thing. Imagine your favorite place, then put the doors, then start to shout the power coming.
Is it one of those things again where she's just becoming so reliant on magic that when it's taken away, she feels weak, she feels tired, she feels like she can't shield? Is it something...
So like physically or mentally, she's unable to do it because...
Because she's got so dependent on magic.
Yeah.
That she's, I don't know, that's a really good question though.
Yeah, I just found it weird. So if maybe somebody can remember some crucial information about this, it would be really appreciated.
Yeah. In this part, Dane is starting to translate for the soldier. The captain can speak the common language.
Yes.
And these call it the common language, but it's only common to Navarre, isn't it?
Mm.
But the basically the Navarish. And he says that the soldier doesn't think that Violet is, and then he gets cut off. And he's like, you know what, doesn't matter. And he sticks his middle finger up at the soldier. And basically that soldier is saying Violet looks weak. She doesn't look strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
And he was about to tell her, and then he got cut off because he realized that's exactly how he treated her in first year, and it wasn't going to go well. So he was kind of like telling the soldier that that's not okay to say that, as part of him kind of redeeming his guilt of how he treated Violet in first year.
Yeah, I thought it was he was about to translate it to Violet, but he knows that that's not true. It's been proved already that Violet is somebody that you need to be careful,
fearful of.
Yes. Either because of the dragon or the mat or anywhere else. So what he does is just, you know what, this guy doesn't know Violet as well as I do, so fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. So they have no choice but to accept that Violet and Zayden want to go and meet the queen. And all right, but Violet has to choose half the squad. They're kind of having this negotiation. She ends up having to pick half the squad. So who goes? We've got Zayden, Dane, Violet, Kat, Oryk.
Yes.
That's it. Garrick's pretty pissed at first, isn't he? But
He understands the reasons.
Well, in the end, but Zayden tells him off, and basically Violet's... the reason Garrick thinks is a bad idea is because of Dane. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Garrick suspects or knows that Auric can talk the language at that point.
No, I think it was just Dane, because he understands that Auric as representative for Navarre, for the kingdom. Card is for Paramir.
But Dane was there for the language.
Dane, yes, for the language. And also, maybe if they had to fight their way in, then maybe Garrick from Garrick, the point of view, he is not the right one for the fight.
Garrick is the better fighter. Yeah. Oh, I feel sad for Dane when he gets knocked out.
Yeah. I mean, Zayden was struggling with the other guy.
That's because Zayden can't read intentions. The reason Zayden's such a great fighter is because he knows what the person's about to do. So without that, I mean, Zayden is still one of the strongest fighters, obviously, but he
always had the advantage.
Mm.
But this guy was, by the description, bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Zayden wasn't fighting with his best weapon.
He chose daggers to help.
Yeah, Violet. Anyway, we're not at that bit yet. So they head to the capital, and the place is constructed to fight dragons. Mm-hmm. So they make a point of noting that the crossbolts are similar to what's on Deverelli, but they're not just pointing at the coast to defend the island. They're able to rotate as though they believe there's a chance that dragons or creatures that fly will breach the land, the border with the land and the sea. I wondered how old these are. And if, let's say, they haven't had dragons for years and years, but like hundreds of years, they could have built them in anticipation that Navarre would fight back after the Second Crovelan Uprising. So we learn by the end of this set of chapters that Umbriel are the ones that were dealing in dragons. So it was their army that went to help with the Second Crovelan Uprising. But the Crovelish didn't follow through on their deal to get the eggs because they were in Navarre.
Yes.
So if Navarre had found out that that is what caused the uprising, they could have attacked Umbriel. And so hundreds of years ago, they could have built these crossbolts in the kind of anticipation that Navarre would attack them.
Mm-hmm.
Either that, or they are hiding something on the island that they genuinely believe somebody is going to attack for. I think it's the first one.
I honestly don't know how to take this one, because we see in this chapter, when Terns arrive with Violet, one of the guards is the one who dares to point around one of these crossbolts to Tern. And then when Sagael comes to the other side, you know that he's being surrounded. But obviously this weapon, they're still functional, so they can still do their job. But doesn't mean that this guy has been just waiting for the fight with Navarre since the second...
Not this one guy.
Not this guy, but I mean the full army has been still prepared just in case for Navarre to attack. Or it could be other kind of dragons they've been fighting as well. But they want dragons, so why they build these weapons against dragons as well? So it's a little bit contradictory. It's
such a lot of money, isn't it, to spend on defense when you're not at war.
Because you need to maintain the weapons, have people there, all that kind of stuff, and fighting against... What if you haven't seen a dragon for centuries? Is it worth it? Keep these weapons there, ready to attack?
And the people, like, you're paying the person.
Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking is that they don't even have bad relationships with their neighboring islands, because they're all telling each other that dragons are on their way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all obviously communicating, not in a negative way.
Yes.
So who are they set up to fight against? Does it make sense, does it?
No.
We're missing something.
Well, we don't know if it's dragons or wyverns, but can a wyvern as well fly that far away?
Would a wyvern still be able? Would the rune work over the? Because it's controlled by magic in a rune. Would that work over the sea? I don't see how it would.
Yeah. We know that some of the runes that Mira took to the island, they don't work there because they need some the magic from the... Yes. But...
Maybe that's the clue. Maybe the wyverns do. But there'd be carcasses and there'd be, like, why? Yeah, we just don't have the information we need yet.
Yeah.
It'll be in book 4 or 5.
Oh, yeah.
So when they get to the crossbolts, Violet says, I don't like you being this close to a crossbolt, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to say to your dragon that you care about. He says, well, I don't like your choice in mates. All right, Tern. Hey, that was a bit random. Like, you know, I don't know whether that is Tern. I didn't read that as Tern's sass, you know, like how he's always been sassy.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't read it as that. I read it as like, he doesn't like Zayden.
No.
Isn't that a bit of shade on Segael as well? Because that's basically saying that she chose poorly. And why is he saying that?
For me, I took it as a, yeah, Tern says that, well, there's other stuff that I don't like it and we still get it. So when Violet says to Tern that, yeah, I don't like it when you are close to a crossbolt, Tern is the one who says that, well, I don't like your mate and here we are. So there is stuff that we can't control. We need to just...
Well, yeah, but what he's doing is he's criticizing his own mate. Because dragons don't make mistakes.
Hmm.
Dragons don't choose the wrong rider. Well, not good ones. Not like Segael and Bade always does.
Yeah. I think maybe for this point, for Tern and Segael, they just think that Segael chose poorly. Because when Zayden was channeling the first time, Segael was saying, but I chose you.
Yeah.
So they go in. And they had to wait for the captain. They're waiting for them. They're surrounded by a dozen of soldiers. They're all of them looking at them. So Violet, she's just trying to calm down. She's still with her hands close to the daggers, just in case. But then from the distance, you can see there's clouds coming. So it's like a storm coming. And she noticed that, okay, there's a storm coming. I think maybe in some point there was like a raindrop or something. But this made me think when I was reading this, because it gave me all the vibes when she was in parapet, when she was in the parapet,
yeah,
there's a storm coming. And I was, oh, does it mean that they say something artificial? It's not something natural. It's somebody wielding a storm at this moment. And who could it be? And then my mind was, that's going to be Lilith.
I was thinking it was more likely to be Theophany.
I mean, there are two storm wielders that we know. But I generally don't believe that Theophany would go that far. Like, in a wyvern.
Yeah, I don't know how she would have got there. And I also think I'm not entirely sure that she would want to go to Umbriel because of how she has shunned Dune. But she might have a need. She might be constantly fighting that need to go there. But I think there's several things I have to say about this.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, though, I don't think it was Lilith on parapet. I do think it was Theophany trying to throw her off.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're never going to find that out because Theophany's dead, Lilith's dead. But
yeah, probably in a flashback or something, a conversation.
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I think that it's more likely to be Dune.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's Violet. Because it's a storm, it's not just lightning, there's clouds, there's rain. Violet doesn't do that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a storm. That's why for me was the only two storm wielders that we know as Lilith and Theophany. The only reason that I don't give it for Theophany is, well, two. One, the one that you said that I don't think she will go there. The second one is that she dies nearly by the end of this book and she never mentioned anything about this.
Yeah.
So she will say something like when she left the note for the lightning welder. So she will do something like make clear that she was there. But no, she dies and there was no reference at all. So the only other option for me, Lilith, in front, since I say I don't believe she's there, this is just like
I think it's Dune. I think it's Dune. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it could have even been Dune on the parapet.
The parapet, for me, doesn't make sense because that was something bad for Violet. Because made the parapet more difficult to pass with the wind.
Because
and all wet.
She, Dune, maybe thought that if Violet didn't want to cross in the storm, she would go and dedicate herself. She would choose her. Because this is like, you see, Dune will still have you if you choose us in your path. Dune doesn't necessarily want Violet to be a rider. Maybe Dune wants her to be a priestess.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I completely understand. I know I agree, but I completely understand.
Yeah, I just feel like it's too far-fetched to bring Lilith back. I really do.
Like I say, if you take away the red eyes reference that she got at the beginning, and if you will give me like a really nice funeral or something that happened after the body, but after she died, was just nothing happened. So yeah, Violet was sad and everything, but there's no reference about ceremony or anything for the general of Basgaya, the
one who sacrificed
their life for all the people from Nawar. There's nothing.
Mm. Yeah, but her stuff got burnt, apart from the journals.
Mm.
I just feel like Mira is already stepping into Lilith's role. The, like, secrecy, the judgment.
Yeah.
Mira really steps into that role in this book. So when the squad are approaching the, I don't know, the queen, the palace, I guess, the soldiers are, like, shouting or talking. Violet can only understand a few words. They say dangerous and holy. I think you're supposed to think, like, this is a swear word.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's they see her hair and they think, ah, make way, holy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. When they were saying this, it was more like, holy shit. They're riders from Navarre with the dragons. But now that you say it, yes, these guys, they had a lot of people that are being dedicated for Dune. So they had the silver head.
This person is holy. Make way for them. Because they do get out of the way.
Yes. Because obviously they are, holy in the island, literally. Yeah.
So we get a bit of a reference to the symbol of Dune, which is two crossed swords. So this is very similar to what the army had. The army had two crossed swords and a horseshoe. Because obviously there's lots of horses in the army.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did last week suspect that there might be a link with Zanal. I'm not sure. And then the symbol of Dune is two crossed swords with a talon in the middle. So much to say about this. So you know how Zayden has the Wrath of Dune and Zayden, like there's been a few times where I've thought there's a link between Zayden and Dune. In fact, all the way through our last season, before Onyx Dawn came out, I thought Dune was his mom for a long time. But again, the cross swords. What does Zayden walk around with? Cross swords at his back. Like, he always has his swords over his back. What is the reference? What is the link between Zayden and Dune? And the things that I'm thinking is that he could be, it could be again like a fate thing where he was sent by Dune to be Violet's partner. And I don't know, it's just the cross swords. It comes back again to Zayden.
Yeah.
He's not got silver hair. He's not been dedicated, but there is some link between Zayden and Dune.
Everything related to Zayden and the gods is something that it confused me a lot because we had this flakes of golden and the eyes. Not sure if that is going to be part of some kind of dedication, but there's going to be...
His mom has them. It's like genetic, isn't it?
Well, the man's probably the only one in the island. So that's why I'm thinking that maybe if the man have it, because she'd been not fully dedicated, but touched like Violet, she did the same for Zayden for protection.
But it would be loyal.
Yeah, has to be loyal. It's the only thing. Yeah. That's why I'm thinking. It confused me because if I'm She's coming for Hylian. That theory, it will be for loyal. And there's been a couple of references when Violet says Zayden as I think she mentioned like an angel from Dune.
Yeah, or the wrath of Dune. Or like the, no, it was like the messenger of the queen of the gods.
Yeah.
But isn't
Amari.
Amari, the queen of gods.
So another god.
Yeah. But I don't know. I kept thinking that there was references to Dune. I think I highlighted quite a lot in the Iron Flame book. But this one's got a Chloron. And Violet says that that's really similar to their symbol of Dune on the continent, which suggests that there's a common origin. I don't know why she would think this is weird, because Dune is a god. And I guess so the symbol of Christianity is a cross, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's the same all over the world. And I know that like that has been for hundreds of years, not just because of modern media and like how connected the world is. That is just the symbol of Christianity. So I'm not really sure why she would expect it to be different. It's Dune.
Yeah.
It's not like a different god. So yeah, I'm not really sure why that was needed to be pointed out. But Ten tells her to snap out of it anyway. So
yes, just one of the lots of time that he does in this chapter.
Yeah.
The thing that caught my attention as well is that there was a Talon. So obviously dragons are a really important part of the culture in this island. And maybe that's why they're so desperate to get dragons, because maybe a long time ago dragons were part of them, and that's why they are training so hard, because they probably were the first riders and they need to show the value to the dragons. And then something happened and they had no dragons anymore. And that respect or that culture about the dragons is still there and still reflected in the symbols as yeah. well.
I think the symbols on the pillars are, like, I think that because the Talon is there, they're trying to get it. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have all the tools of warfare. They have some of them, but they don't have all of them. What are the symbols? So there's a sword, a shield, fire, water, a claw, and a book. Why are there only six? What's the seventh one? There's always seven. There's supposed to be six, and then there's a seventh one.
Six and the one.
The claw could be griffins, though, couldn't it? Like, the griffins have claws.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why it's so... It's not definitely a dragon.
No.
But also, I wonder, like, why is water a tool of warfare? Yeah, it didn't. That one stuck out to me. Sword, shield... Obviously, like just art, like weapons and protection.
Yeah.
Fire, water.
Just elements to make more weapons.
Yeah, but what about wind and earth?
Mm.
I know earth probably isn't, but wind could be.
Yeah.
And then obviously the claw. They don't have hoofs. They don't have like horseshoe. On there.
Yeah.
And that is a key tool for them. They've obviously replaced their claws with horses. And then the book is the interesting one, isn't it? Because it's all about misinformation and and stuff. There's a lot of detail about this place. There's also a giant statue of Dune. I don't know if it's significant that she has her sword held high and her shield protecting the side of her temple. I think it seems like quite an impressive place where you've got the pillars with the carvings and the giant statue of Dune. Behind the statue of Dune is where the children come out of the temple, and Violet notices that one of them has half a head of silver hair, just like her. This was really cool. If you think about, so now we're reading this part of the book for, like, I don't know, we've read it a couple of times. The first time we read this, we had no idea we were going to get the answers about her silver hair.
Yes.
And when this happened, I was like, all of them have silver hair, apart from this one kid that doesn't. We don't find anything more about it in this chapter, but that is kind of the shock.
Yeah, they finally that we end found on. Somebody like Violet. You know, this chapter is just a little bit confusing with the epigraphs and what happens. So at the beginning of this one, that you shouldn't worship just one god, or all of them, or none of them. But we had an island when every single one had a favorite one. Mm-hmm. So obviously that is not following. Then we have another one. There's a missive, I think, or a public note that they're not allowed to dedicate children anymore. And we had this little girl here.
Well, that's because
Hal Silver hair.
Yeah, but the law is on Navarre, on and Poor Emile. It's on the continent. The law isn't on Umbriel.
Yeah,
they dedicate their children on Umbriel. It's a Navarrean law, that one, but it says it was ruled out even earlier in Poor Emile. So Navarre followed. Poor Emile did it first, then Navarre.
Yes,
but Umbriel obviously still does it. I guess like capital punishment is outlawed
in some places, yes.
A lot of countries, but in other countries it's not.
The other thing that it caught my attention about these people with silver hair, because all of them have silver hair, is the robes as well. So now they have blue robes. Mm-hmm. First started going to my mom, Berwyn. I was like,
oh, you are obsessed with blue robes.
Blue robes, yes. That is my call.
Does Theophany have blue robes? I imagined her having grey robes, and I don't know why.
I imagine her more like a scribe. They were all the time scribe robes.
Because she was sneaking into the scribe.
Yeah, so I don't know if she changed the clothes after that, or if she just keep it.
I don't know how scribes keep their robes clean. That doesn't really matter. The thing that I thought of because it was pale blue robes, was more like healers.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's significant. I think they're just blue.
Yeah, it's just culture. And yeah.
The silver hair is far more important.
Okay. That's key, obviously.
Yeah. Chapter 31?
Chapter 31.
Guardians are no longer permitted to dedicate children in service to their favoured deity. The decision to serve gods for life must be made after the age of majority and of one's free will. Public notice 200.417, transcribed by Raquel Lightstone. Well, 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 isn't Daddy Soringale a little rule breaker?
Yes, and I wonder as well why they decide to do that. So, for one side, I understand that, yes, if you're a child and you've been dedicated to a god that you are not agreed with some of the stuff that the god required, you might feel that your parents maybe ruined your life or you're not having the life that you want. And yeah, that's not fair for the child.
It's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yes. And the other hand as well, what other thing could happen to make this law, basically? So first thing that comes to my mind, Theophany.
Yes, you ruined it for everyone.
Yes.
They're like, oh no, this person.
And we don't know if there's more like her. There may be, yes, they were dedicated and then just changed their mind. And maybe they use the venom side as a freedom. Because if they're full dedicated, they feel this longing to the temple. But if maybe they channel from the ground, they break with the god.
Yeah. That is really, really interesting. So you think there was more children dedicated, and because they were rebelling against that dedication, they started to turn venom?
Yeah, so you know, like the flyers, when they didn't make it to bond with the griffon, and then at the bottom of the cliff, they had a venom, they just calling and then talking about this new religion.
Drug.
So Bas Gaiad started to build all the traps and all the stuff for the cadets to precisely to avoid that situation. They have people that are more likely to turn into venom. So if we start to see that maybe a lot of the children that were dedicated to gods, they start to turn venom, maybe because there was a way to break that bond with the god, then they had to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so again, I wonder how many other like Theophany we will see.
Yeah, but you only have a lifetime dedication of Loial and Dune.
Yeah.
We don't know very much about Loial.
No, that's still a mystery so far.
Mm.
And something that we know for sure is that when dedicated the person to the god, the soul change. So that's why the hair turns silver
We don't know what's going to change when somebody's dedicated or loyal. Maybe the eyes.
Yeah, but maybe nothing physically does change. We know it does for Dune, but it doesn't necessarily for Loyal.
I mean, I don't see why not, because it will be playing with the same rules.
Mm.
Maybe it will be rubbish if it's the head as well. I'm guessing there will be some kind of distinction. So I'm really interested to see what happened to the people who are dedicated to Loyal. Was the physically changed, if
there is one. Yeah, same. Yeah. Back to the child with half silver hair. There was so much speculation that this was due to the virus. This was possibly something to do with Violet being part Venom.
Yes, there was, that was my
Oh, was my it? Thought. There's so many theories. And this was not what we were expecting at all.
Well, fair for me, I wasn't expecting anything about the gods. For me, well, like, no, because it's not going to be a mixed dragons, gods, and other stuff. And then when I saw this, I was like, oh,
okay. Yeah, you're wrong.
I'm really wrong.
She, interestingly, Violet says, does she have weak joints? Is she, like, does she struggle physically as well?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that Violet associates her silver hair with her weak joints. And I think it's safe to say that that's not why she has weak joints. That is something else entirely. It could be that she just genuinely has ED, or it could be as a result of this is the bit that's caused by the virus.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what's going to be Rebecca Jarrow's point of view on this, because obviously she put this on Violet to make more people aware about this than not many people knew about it.
I think Violet associates it with the virus because she's always been told that there was a virus, and she's been, that's basically been the cover-up story, hasn't it? So whether or not there was a virus, we don't actually know. There might never have been a virus. Just a cover-up story for a dad going AWOL and trying to dedicate her to Dune. We've mentioned this a little bit earlier on in the episode. Ten again. So when she sees the kid with silver hair, Ten again tells her to focus, stop analysing. We'll come back to that later. There's such a good reel by Dragons in the Detail on Instagram. They kind of break down all the times that Tens tells her to stop analyzing. They also call back to the point in the previous chapter where they're flying into the palace, into the center of the city, and she says it's just over there, and he says, I know, I was there, I remember. And they say, why would he say that if he'd never been there? So they suspect that Tan has been to this place in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Has he been to this temple? And they talk about how the cross, that could be why the crossbows are there. They've been there in the past.
Yeah.
I'm going to build on this and go as far as saying, could Tan have been there on that journey where Daddy Sorengale takes Violet to be dedicated? Could that be the reason why the dedication was never finished? There was some vision by the Oracle that was kind of exacerbated by the fact that Ten was with the party. Like, we don't know how Daddy Sorengale got there. We know that it's unlikely that Ten physically carried him himself. Did he go in a basket? I don't know. But it feels suspicious. And I like to come back again to the point where Ten says, I know exactly who and what you are. He knows her. He's known her for a lot longer than she would have realized. I agree with Dragons in the Detail that Ten has been to Umbriel before. And I like wonder if that was part of Violet's dedication trip.
Ten in this chapter has been really weird. He's just been trying constantly just to snap up Violet with the thoughts.
But really important things like the connection to Dune, the silver hair, the really important things. He doesn't want her overanalyzing them right now. And yeah, you might think that's because she's got to focus and she's got to... But he, at this point, he doesn't know that she's going to be fighting. He doesn't... They're just on their way in. Yeah, it's tense and it's scary, but he's hiding something.
The question is this. How long has been Tern maybe linked to Violet's family or even Violet herself? Because it's true what he said from the first time when he met Violet, I know exactly what and who you are.
Hmm.
So we always were thinking that maybe it's because she is half-blood dragon or something like this. But maybe it's something about the gods, and that's why he always sent the puny gods, because he knows everything about the gods, He's just not agree with all the stuff.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, what about Naylin? But we find out that we think Rebecca Yarros has hinted enough that Brennan and Naylin were in a relationship. She's never said it, but she's hinted at it quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Naylin was that the person he was in a relationship was a few years older than him.
Yes.
So if we think about the time where Violet was like 2 years old, Naylin wouldn't have been bonded to Tern at that point. So Tern would be an unbonded dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Naylin was his first and only previous rider.
Yes.
So at that point, Tern would have been free to do what he wants. Why would he be accompanying that mission unless it was something to do with the Empyrean, like in preparation to stop her bonding, like they knew something?
Tern is a really important dragon. Basically, he is the second biggest and powerful dragon from all the continent. And we don't know why he waits so long to get a rider. What he's been doing all that time before.
Mm.
Maybe he's doing secret mission for the Empyrean, dragon business, and some of those dragon business were outside. So we don't know anything about it. And it would be interesting to see if maybe in those missions outside, at some point he crossed the way with Daddy Sorengel.
Yeah, the bit that makes me think that he was there with Daddy Sorengel is that he was saying, I was there, I remember. And she is referring back, not to like looking at a map. She's referring back to the research.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he say he was there? He remembers if he wasn't there with Daddy Sorengel. So my money is on the fact that he was there. I don't know why, but I'm sure we'll come up with some reasons why in the next few weeks. I think he was there.
Yes.
And thanks to Dragons in the Detail for pointing that out, pointing the fact out that he'd been there before, because it's such a good reel. Violet knows that moving on to the task at hand, they have to fight for an audience with the Queen. Violet knows that Zayden is going to have to fight. She sends up a silent prayer to Dune,
mm-hmm,
that he's ready. Did this help?
Fighting against one of the Dunes people?
Well, people that think they're Dune. The dedicated ones are, but the soldiers aren't.
Yeah, but it's basically in the island when they just pray to
Dune. But Violet's in Dune's favour. You've got to remember, like, she's been selected by a god.
Yes.
Or maybe not. She's been touched by a god.
Some of the other people that we still don't know why they're doing that.
I think Dune was with Violet. It doesn't seem like she was with Zayden, because Zayden wasn't winning his fight. And had Violet not thrown the dagger at the last minute,
he would be in trouble.
He would be in trouble, yeah. But anyway, this is where we find out that Oryk can speak Unbrish. When I was reading this again, I had to check, because there is a missive towards the end of the book, a letter to Oryk, mm-hmm, that says, from one servant of Dune to another, here is like the weapon, she must use it, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
I didn't know that it was that, whether it was clear that Violet was a servant of Dune, because she's not a servant of Dune. She's touched by Dune.
Yes.
That makes it seem like Oryk is the servant of Dune.
Yeah.
I thought that was all really odd because he's not got silver hair, he's not dedicated. But is there something, some link between Oryk and Dune? He speaks Umbrish, but I also checked, he can speak Zelnian as well.
Yes.
But she speaks the common language, doesn't she? But he speaks other languages. It's not unique. But I still think that letter between the priestess in Tirindor and Oryk addressed from one servant of Dune to another.
Yeah, that's how I understand it. The Oryk was a servant of Dune as well. And in this chapter, Violet said that when he's speaking, his speech is flawless. So I'm
that,
wondering
that
if
that makes me feel like he's the one that took the eggs to Umbriel. Because she would have seen, like, you know what they, like, they see things in smoke, don't they, in the temples?
Yeah, so maybe Oryk is just, you know, I think we said this before, and kind of Doctor Strange from Infinity War, the Marvel movies, that he knows that this is the only way to win the fight. Even maybe it's something that nobody can understand, but it's the only way.
Yeah. I hope he's not the one that turned Venom. I can see it because of the third brother prophecy and all of that. But I'm currently leaning to him having taken the eggs to Umbriel. And that is why he is referred to as a servant of Dune.
For me, the only reason that I would think that Oryk is the one who turned into Venom in the end is because Rebecca Jarls needs something to take Oryk away from Violet.
Because he's so useful.
Yes, if Violet has somebody that can see the future and can tell her everything that she needs, how difficult will it be for her to get everything the way she wants, where Zaydan is? How can I get to him? How can I cure him?
She needs to take him out.
All the answers are in Oryk's.
Yeah, but she can't kill him. That's a really good point.
Yes. So,
it's like the Hedwig thing.
So, I generally won't believe that because the clues that Rebecca Jarls has said, who is the brother who's been seen struggling, who's the one who is not there in the end, all that kind of stuff, I don't see fit into Oryk. Mm. But to be honest, I didn't see Violet as a dreamwalker either.
Yeah.
So...
yeah,
that's another.
I do genuinely believe that she's keeping it open so she can decide. She can change her mind. I know why I'm whispering.
Then maybe she's checking reels and stuff, and then the name that's less popular, that one.
No, she won't do that. I think it's Bodhi. Right. So... Zaydan gives a little speech, like Oryk wants to fight, and he's talking. He's being a bit sneaky because he's the only one that like properly speaks fluent Umbrish. Mm-hmm. But he wants to fight, and he's like, I'm not my father, I'm not my brother. I'm going to paraphrase, but Zaydan says, no, you are not your father and you're not your brother, and that's precisely why we need you to live, because your kingdom needs you. And that's like a really good thing for Zaydan to say. And then Oryk says, I could say the same thing for you. And he's like, no, because Tirindor is safe in Bodhi's hands if I die.
Yes.
Question number one. Would Tirindor be safe in Bodhi's hands? Question number two. Is this why people think that Violet married Bodhi at the end of the book?
Oh, gosh. I mean... answer to question number one, no. I think Bodhi will be just giving secrets, like stay secrets to everyone.
Oh, he's just chatting shit. Like, yeah, just walking around, giving everybody...
the first thing. Mm. So, yeah, Tirindor will be ruined.
Oh, nothing's classified.
Strategy, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Forgot about that.
And the second one, I won't think Zaydan will allow Violet get married with Bodhi for any kind of circumstances.
No.
It's just... no, I don't see it.
Don't we see them?
It's been just 12 hours missing. So there's, whatever it happened in 12 hours. So I don't see Zaydan first giving out the title, Bodhi, having it back.
So we know that Violet isn't married to Bodhi because Brennan sees the marriage, the blessing, the certificate. Mm-hmm. Violet says to Zayden, and Brennan nods. So we know that she's married to Zayden.
Yeah,
but it would be cool. I do like the I do like the theory.
Well, yeah, you know, everything is conspiracy and
we don't
crazy theory.
Yeah, we might not trust Brennan. He doesn't say yes. He might be like, because he knows she's going to flip out if she sees it says Bodhi Duran.
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations, Mrs. Duran. No. But Zayden trusts him. Zayden really, really trusts him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is key.
Yeah. Trust him because it's like a brother. Brother that saw him struggling for 5 months.
Yeah. Bodhi's definitely the villain.
Everything for me, honestly, pointed out to Bodhi.
Same! And everyone's like, no, it's Garrick, it's Garrick, it's Garrick. I can't see how it's Garrick.
But, and precisely because of that, it's going to be somebody there. We have no clue. It's going to be, I don't know, Kaori.
It's going to be Garrick, because I'm always wrong about everything.
Yeah.
Oh, God, imagine if it was Kaori.
Yeah. The brother is almost struggling.
He didn't see him struggling, did he? But that would be very unexpected.
that's what I was saying. There's going to be somebody there. Everyone will be like, what?
Yeah. How did he see him struggle? He didn't.
Yeah, in the office when they were teachers.
Mm.
There you go. Putting all the links together.
Right. Should we come back to the... How many times do we go off track and talk about who the brother could be? It's definitely Bodhi. We get a close-up of the priestess because she comes around and she starts, like, stabbing people, making their blood fall onto the stones so they have to fight. But anyway, we see her. She has a fading tattoo. Well, she has a tattoo. I don't know if it's fading. She has a tattoo on her forehead. Violet says she's got to be 75-ish. How long would it take for the tattoo to fade so much that you couldn't really tell what it was? And then she starts putting the stuff together in her head. She doesn't say it, but we know. We're like, ooh, theophany.
Yes.
That is as concrete evidence as there can be that theophany is hella old, like really old.
Mm-hmm.
So how old is theophany?
You know, because me as a writer, I like to make sure that all the stuff that I'm putting in the books is in fact and they can be explained like very well. So when I read this, I get like really curious, like how long it will take a tattoo in real life to start to fade in. So I started looking at websites, some calculation and stuff like that. And apparently the time for a tattoo to fade it to the point that it's not being recognizable is between 40 and 80 years. So that didn't give me that much information because I was thinking if you're able to like contain like how much fade in, I don't know, 5 years,
Like to be so faint.
Yeah, that you will see something like a shade or something, but you won't be able to tell what it is between 40 and 80 years. So for me, it was disappointing.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, it was disappointing.
No, I don't believe that. 40 years? I don't believe that.
Between 40 and 80 years.
Yeah, 80 I can get, but 40?
Well, how many people you have, you know, they had a tattoo for 40 years?
Right, like...
40 years is still a big number with a tattoo. Obviously, it's an estimation, but when I was doing this, I'd say it would give me like centuries or something like that.
But why would it give you centuries? Nobody lives for centuries.
Yeah, but it's an estimation.
Oh, like if the skin comes off. No, so I don't think...
It says between 40 and 80 because it depends on the skin, depends on the ink, depends on the weather as well. If I have sun,
very
if
stormy and umbrella. No, I think this is a hint that she's really old. I don't think it's a scientifically correct 40 to 80 years. My guess is that this is really old. And when you are aging your people, your characters, she's not going to be from like a random time between major events, is she? She's going to be from major events because that's what the clues are.
Yes.
I don't think she's like as ancient as Cortland.
1,000 years.
Yeah, I think he was 1,000 years before Navarre even existed. I don't think she is like from the Craven Uprising or anything. I think she is from the first six, but I don't think she bonded.
That was my
from the same time as the first six.
That was my first reaction because the tattoo, it gave away that it's supposed to be so old that that one is faded. Plus, she knew about Eretz. So, Eretz have been missing basically for 650 years since basically Nabal put the wars. So, I was thinking it has to be something around that time.
Yeah, which is really old.
Yes.
And we know that Lilith was the answer to her. So the first storm, the biggest, like the most strongest storm wielders never stood a chance. And then Lilith was the one that was maybe, but no, she didn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
And then Violet just took her out. Violet hears thunder in the distance, talking of storm wielders like Theophany and Lilith. Then she's like, I want my fucking power back. She has a bit of a tantrum. That's how I read it anyway. And then she's like, without power, Zayden's the strongest rider here, but with it, I am. Shut the front door. She is not stronger than Zayden. I don't care what she thinks. Yes, lightning is great, it's powerful. She's not 100%. I mean, she's got a lot better, hasn't she? She's very good. Mm-hmm. She can wipe out all these Wyvern in a cloud. But she needs a cloud to do that. Zayden's shadows, I'm sorry, but they are very, very powerful. They have multiple applications.
Mm.
I don't think Violet is more powerful than Zayden.
I think she's talking about just how deadly is the power. Like one strike, one wyvern goes down.
But one squeeze of the neck with his shadows, one snap. These shadows can do all sorts of stuff.
No,
like,
I give you that. As if you ask me if I want to be a lightning wielder or a shadow wielder, I will definitely go for shadow wielder.
You'd definitely be a shadow wielder.
Yeah, because the amount of things that you can do with those shadows is just amazing.
He took out 12 people in one go. Violet would need a cloud to do that.
Yes.
And she would risk taking herself out.
And say that made this mushroom cloud that you...
A big mushroom cloud of shadow.
And that was just as I asked, imagine when he goes to Station Maven.
Yeah. I mean, it's pure power. So maybe that's what she's thinking. But she's getting a bit... big for her boots here, isn't she?
Yeah, spending too much time with town.
Yeah, that's what it is, rubbing off. The weather. Where is the weather coming from? I made my list.
Just one name, Lilith. That's it.
No, I didn't put Lilith on my list because she's dead. Violet is one option. That's what everybody says. Mm. Oh, did you do that? Did you do that? I don't think Violet did it. It's a storm.
Yes.
The lightning cracked. So maybe the storm was... One thing we haven't said is the storm could have been completely coincidental. Like, could have been the weather.
Mm-hmm.
We need Rhiannon and her book of historical weather... Or her book of weather patterns.
Yes.
But it could have been the storm was coming anyway. And Violet brought the lightning. But there was thunder in the distance. And that's not something that Violet doesn't control the weather, so she does not create thunder. Could be Theophany, but again, we said, don't think she would travel all the way there.
Mm-hmm.
Andana, maybe, but again, it's a storm. But I think it could be power from the sky. Like Andana could be making the power come down from the sky. And Dune was my other option. And I like the idea that it's Dune. I think Dune is helping Violet.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I would like to think for sure is that a storm, it wasn't a natural event.
Yeah, it feels like it wasn't, doesn't it?
Definitely we need some books of weather and umbrella as well to see when it's real.
Need the weather forecast. Just stick the TV on at 6 p.m.
Yes, we're not expecting a storm, so if you see anything, it's a storm wielder around. But I would like to think there's Lilith, you know, imbuing the weapon.
No, I really don't think it's... I'm not gonna go too much down there, because I really don't think it's Lilith. But there is a lot of hints that... Did you do that, Violet? you can't. And then Violet's like, how many times do I have to tell you? There's no magic here. Mm-hmm. And then Mira says, yeah, but you can still communicate with your dragons.
Yes.
It's definitely something that Violet is doing or that is linked to Violet.
Mm-hmm.
I just want it to be Dune.
Okay, I have a theory about it. So before the lightning strikes, we see the Violet is about to fight with Marley. And Darna is really close and she is camouflaged. She's basically invisible, but Violet is able to see the golden eyes just reflecting in one of the statues of Doom. So Andarna is watching the fight, and for Andarna, she thinks that it's not fair because they weren't there just for one fight. It was Zaydan.
Really angry.
She was really angry when she saw that Violet was fighting as well with this woman. There was basically no match for Violet, and just in physical appearance. Mm. So Andarna was really close. And when Violet was really angry as well, when she was trying to make the queen to yield, Andarna was angry as well.
She I was don't like know. Rippling her scales of her.
Yes, that is the key. Why? I really think Violet was the one who made this lightning happen. She willed. Because what Andarna was saying at the beginning of this book, magic feels different when I change color.
Oh, yeah.
She was changing color.
From the sky.
That's why when she was doing it, she burned the Vanny the first time in Iron Flame. Here, she was doing exactly the same. She was changing color. When she's doing that, I really think it's when she starts to wield him from the sky. Mm. She starts channeling from
the
sky.
So she doesn't do it all the time. She only does it when she's changing color. Yes,
and then when she's channeling from the sky, Violet had these new souls coming as well. And when she was angry, the lightning strike. And what is what lightning starts with Violet at the beginning? With feelings. When she's really angry. Or when she's really horny.
And she can't shield that.
Yeah, so I think when this is happening for her, it's like the very first time. So it's that new source. She doesn't realize it's happening.
Yeah.
And she's the one that actually do it.
Yeah, that's interesting because it kind of checks out as well that you'd think that she couldn't access, if you weren't thinking about it a lot, you'd think that she wouldn't be able to access the lightning. She'd be able to do the dream walking and the mind walking stuff because that's undark. That's the signet that she has, which is a unique combination of her personality or her deep need and Andarna's power. The lightning and the power channeling is turns, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And you'd think, well, she can't access turns. But later on in the book, when Andarna breaks the bond and she goes, Violet still has the mind-walking power. So I think once you develop a signet, the signet is the signet, and it doesn't matter
the
source of the power, because that is why a Venon will still keep their signet, because the signet's being powered by a different type of magic.
Yes.
So it totally makes sense. And yeah, I think you're right. I was wanting it to be Doom, but now it's so obvious. I don't know how I missed that.
Yeah, for me, when I was reading it, I was like, this is how she do it. This is how she channeled from the sky. She needs to change the colors.
Is it the changing of the colors that means she can channel from the sky, or is it when she channels from the sky, she changes color? Like, what's the cause and what's the effect?
I don't know, because in both occasions, it's exactly the same. She was basically camouflaging or invisible. Mm-hmm. And then when she started to get rid of that camouflage, that color, the black, it started to
It was like back. Ripples, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. It's when she said the magic feels different.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Totally right.
Yeah.
Convinced. So the priestess is talking to Violet. She's already decided that Zaydan will fight. And she's now decided that Dane will fight. It's kind of, she chooses Dane by process of elimination. She's like, Auric is the prince. He's not going to fight. Dune has not chosen him today. Kat, she's an outsider and they think a lot of her, so she's going to spare her. Violet's the smallest, so won't be her. So Dane, it's got to be Dane.
Yeah.
And then Auric's like, I'll fight. And she's like, no. And then Violet has a bit of a chat with the priestess. The priestess asks Violet if she chose this life. And Violet is about to say, well, my mom, and then she thinks about all the times that she could have got out and that Dane gave her basically a free ticket out of there.
Yes.
And she chose to stay. So she was like, yeah, actually I did. I chose to stay. And this is when the priestess says, it is a good thing that we did not complete your dedication. Not only have we got a confirmation there that they did not, that Violet was like, there was an attempt to get Violet dedicated. We get confirmation that it was not completed. And we get confirmation that it was on the Isle of Umbriel. So there's three things like confirmed there. Then she says, or perhaps you favor, you, I mean, you can still, Dune will still have you basically. Or perhaps you've chosen another god. And then she looks at Tern and then she looks at Zaydan. The chosen another god and the fact that she looks at dragon, I mentioned this right at the beginning of the episode. It feels to me like there's a link there between Tern and a god or dragons and a god. And it wouldn't be an episode of Faithfully Fantasy if I didn't throw in my nail in as Malik theory.
Here we go. It's been a while.
So we know that Violet, and I know this is unhinged, but I just can't get it out of my head. We know that Violet has some kind of link with Malik because of the epigraph at the end that says, that same one that says, from one servant of Dune to another, I pray that she doesn't have to use this to meet or to reacquaint herself with the other who curries her favor. So Malik is in favor with her. Mm-hmm. She looks at Tern. Naelin, in air quotes, resurrected Brennan. Mm-hmm. Kaori says, saving a life makes you a hero or something, does it? I'm making this up. But resurrection makes you a god. Bringing someone back to life makes you a god. Which god would not want you to bring someone back to life? Malik.
Yeah.
That, for me, just, like, again, I come back to the fact that Naelin could have knocked Malik off his throne and become the god of death for doing that. And I know it's bonkers, but this whole series is bonkers. I still think there's a connection between Naelin and Malik. And the fact that she looks at Tern.
So, you can believe that Naelin is Malik now, but you don't believe Lilith is alive.
No. She would never bring back a mother. Like, if she brings back a mother,
mm-hmm.
it just, the loss is so painful. It just, like, she might do, but I feel like it just devalues that whole loss. And then you start to think, well, death doesn't mean anything. Like, you don't, Rebecca Yarros likes us to care about people and then be absolutely heartbroken when they die. If she kept bringing people back, like Brennan, Jack, I mean, we weren't heartbroken for him. If she brings back Lilith, death is going to mean so much less. It's kind of like that way with Game of Thrones. People get dying and Prison Break. We've talked about this. Like, did they die? Probably not. You don't feel that.
Yeah, but you know the part when we feel like broken that because somebody died. What are, I would think right now, two occasions. Leanne, of course. We know that Leanne died, that Zaydan was with their other friends, burning the body, the dragon.
I felt broken with Lilith. Like, that makes me cry every time still.
Yeah. No, for me, not that much. But the other one is with Trigger. When Trigger died, that was like really shocked. I'm not going to cry. But when he died,
I was like, ah, poor cat. Like,
yes. So it's something sad and something shocking the way that he dies. But when he died, there's a ceremony, burning everything.
Yeah, but they didn't have time. They would have done the ceremony. It was just off the page.
You ask me, is Leanne coming back or is Trigger coming back? No, they're dead and they're burned and their ashes have been sprayed.
So is Quinn coming back?
We didn't see in the end what happened.
Oh, don't. Like, if she brings Lilith back, I honestly think that devalues the pain mm-hmm. of death in this series. And I will not feel, I'm saying this, and I'll still cry like a baby when Dane dies.
Yeah, but it's going to be happy when Violet maybe dying or something, and then Lilith appear, you don't touch my baby, and then
not my storm. Daughter, you bitch. Like Molly Weasley, the Molly Weasley treatment.
Yes.
No.
Okay, just let's move it on.
Let's do a poll.
Lilith alive? Yes or no? It's going to be no.
Yeah, because I'm going to write it and I'm going to be like, do you think I'm Jay-Z right? Thinks or Jay-Z thinks oh, my this. God. Yeah.
Oh, you can think like this.
And then you can do one is Neil and Malik. And everyone will be like, 100% no. So we've talked a bit about why she might look at 10 when she says, perhaps you've chosen another god. Another reason why she might look at Zayden is because Loial is the other one who requires a lifetime of dedication. Mm-hmm. This is more likely, in my opinion, because of that, the fact that Loial is the only other god that requires a lifetime of dedication. Has she unwittingly chosen Loial through Zayden just off the basis that she is choosing love? She's like, I choose him. Mm-hmm. And Zayden has spent the whole book saying the same thing. I only answer to her. Yeah. I use Tyrandor to protect her, not the other way around. He chooses Violet. Violet chooses him. And that is like a deep kind of love, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they're choosing love and not war. And that is deliberate because she can choose both. So I do think it's more likely that there's a link there between Violet and Loial. I don't think there's a physical dedication, but I do wonder if there's a, like, you choose that, and if you really know love like that, then you are dedicated to Loial.
Yes. Still don't know about if there's any reference about people who's dedicated to Loial, but I really want to know that. I say this again, but I still think it's going to be maybe if Zayden is touched or something, maybe it's all those golden flakes. And maybe if you're full dedicated, your full eyes are golden. So like
a dragon. But
yeah,
I don't know. So for me, the question about dedication to Loial, why would you dedicate yourself to the god of love and then spend all of your life worshipping that god in a temple? I don't think you do that with Loial. I think you fall in love, like deeply, irrevocably in love.
And that is
your,
war.
Yeah, your you giving that love for life is your dedication to Loial.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that protects your soul because it does say love and war change our souls forever. I think that offers both Violet and Zayden some protection from the stolen magic.
Yes.
So I just don't get why you would have a load of people in a temple worshipping Loial. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing something? Wouldn't you like be the ones that genuinely believed in love and wanted love and they were like worshipping the god of love? They'll be out there being in love, wouldn't they?
Yes, because as a god of love, you want is just the love is spread for the world. The more people you start to love, you are basically worshipping the god as well, because at the end, that's what you're doing, just giving love.
Yeah.
Okay, so we end this chapter with Violet now has to fight.
Yes, chapter 32.
Epigraph.
With such one colouring in the vegetation, it comes as no surprise that it requires four times the amount of indigo to dye even the simplest garment. I can't help but wonder if the colours of our continent are the exception or if the Isles are. Umbriel, Isle of Dune by Second Lieutenant Asher Daxton. Which is it? So I suspect that it's the continent that's the right colour because there was magic everywhere before. Mm-hmm. And then the Isles somehow lost their magic, but it could totally be the other way around, and the fact that magic's there is unnatural.
Well, I really think the magic influences all around. So with the dragons, they feel stronger and they feel more powerful when magic is there. So we have referenced the colors and the ocean that are more vivid, the colors and the islands. We know for sure there's no magic in the islands. So for me, I think the magic influenced this as well. And again, what we seen in previous episodes doesn't mean there's maybe magic in the ocean because the colors are vivid, or this is just the reference that there's no magic on the islands because it's all drained. And maybe now everything starts to flourish after centuries or something, but still with no magic, everything is still pale, everything is still just... Mm-mm. Not vivid.
Do you think there's some connection between Violet and this lack of colouring? Because she's got pale skin, pale hair, pale everything. I think there's a link back to Violet.
I'm not sure, to be honest, because I always thought the all related, like, physical appearance from Violet was because Lily was attacked by a venom when... She was pregnant or Violet.
Poison tip dagger or something, yeah.
Yeah, or the drain and start to tear the colors or something. That's what I was thinking
at the beginning. That's what I feel like happened to the Isle Kingdoms. Hmm. I feel like there previously was magic there and it's gone.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't have any evidence for that.
And who did it? Venom or dragon?
Great question. So Violet has to face... Marlys.
Yes, Marlys.
Marlys. I don't know why I say these kind of things in like a Hispanic way. Because the audio, that's kind of what I get. That's the vibe I get from Rebecca Solo when she does it in the audiobook.
Yes.
Dragons. That's what she
Dragons.
Says. Dragons.
So when Violet found out that she has to fight her, and then Marlys comes to the mat. She sees Violet, and she starts basically laughing at Violet. And Violet is like, yeah, I will get you.
I'm taking down bigger.
Taking them bigger. And she raised the eyebrows, so she understands that. And yes, we can give it out to Violet, because if I will remember what happened at the beginning on Iron Flame when she was fighting with this cadet, the one there to kill her, it was a big guy.
The assassin, yeah, she took him down.
It was a venom as well. So Violet, with magic or no magic, she is somebody that you need to be fearful about her.
Yeah, yeah. And Zayden's taught her to go for the weak spots.
Yeah.
And about leverage.
Like, be smart, you know, being just strong.
I think Zayden taught her about leverage in the first, when he was like training her on the mat.
Yes.
So you've mentioned this already. When she looks at the Statue of Dune, she sees the golden eyes. I don't think I realized until this point that Andana could literally become invisible. Is it camouflage? Like, how? It must be pretty amazing, because she can still make out the features of Dune, the Statue of Dune.
Mm.
Or is she going invisible?
I honestly see her like Predator, you know, in the movies. When it's camouflaging in the jungle, the only thing that you can see is like the eyes flashing from time to time. So I think
people matching. Can't
see it. Yes, so it's just like you can see through and you're not aware that something is there.
So cool.
Yeah.
Violet says, just for once, it would be nice if Andana stayed where I asked her to be. Why would she? She's a dragon. They don't listen. They don't pay attention to humans. Like, this is another instance where they're babying Andana. She might listen to Tern, but she's not going to... Violet will say, stay there. She doesn't need to listen to Violet. She's just a puny human.
I mean, something that has been clear since Fourth Wing is that nobody tells to Andana what to do.
Well, nobody tells a dragon what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, unless you're Tern. Then you are allowed to tell the other dragons what to do.
I think Andana needs an intervention. She needs to be like, stop treating me like a baby. I am far more powerful than you are, miss.
And all that.
Yeah, I'm older and wiser and, well, she's not wiser, but...
Unique.
Yeah, she's way more powerful than Violet. She needs to chill. Violet needs to chill out.
I mean, I don't know what, the only thing he's doing is she's protecting her human, because in the end, that's what Violet is for her. And yes, we know that most all the cases, if the rider died, the dragon can survive.
Mm.
We don't know if it's the same for Andarna. Maybe if Violet dies, Andarna will die with her as well. So basically, she will be protecting her own life, making sure that Violet, she will be fine.
Yeah. They may have been the two known cases in history.
Yeah.
Irids.
True. And maybe that's why they just start bonding in.
Yeah,
so
the Irids are able to break bonds as well, so you'd think that they would have more control over that.
Yeah, that's another question. If they're able to break bonds, why it was so important for Leotan who bond first? Because if you're an Irid,
well, maybe you can't.
Yeah, that's my theory. That's why I still think that Andarna was the first to bond. But if they can break bonds with a human as the first rider.
You can't.
Yeah.
Violet starts to fight with daggers. They all choose daggers, which makes sense because Dane and Zayden, they might not be their best thing, but they're not going to, but they're definitely Violet's advantage.
Yes.
So, and they're not going to be disadvantaged. Violet says adrenaline kicks in, coursing through her like power. This is another like nod to the fact that power is a type of drug. Adrenaline can be given as a drug. It's obviously a natural chemical that we produce in our body. But it reminds me of the, like, she's tired and she cracks open the door of the archives and gets, like, a energy boost.
Yeah.
This is, like, a similar thing. She's treating, or she's kind of talking about the adrenaline flood as in link to the power. And it's just one of those things that shows that how reliant, again, that... she's getting on this power.
She is basically following the same steps of the dragons, just completely relying on anything that can give it that power, or they make him feel they are just invincible.
Yeah, and that's why I think a rider can't live without their dragon, because they're so reliant on this power. Their body doesn't work without it.
Yes. And the fight, Violet needs to rely on speed, because she knows that she won't be able to outmatch Marley's own power. So she tries to stab her a couple of times. One of them, she managed to cut Marley's, but at the same time, Marley managed to try to stab her.
Yeah, break her ribs.
Break the ribs.
Again.
The only thing that was protecting Violet was the dragon scale armor from Mira. They saved her life again. And even Marley was impressed with that, because she was looking at the daggers like, there's something wrong with this, because she should be dead by now or something. But she was like, okay, so I underestimate this little one. And then even she proposed, like, okay, I'll take my armor out if you take yours. And Violet's just like, hard pass.
Yeah, I can get through yours. You can't get through.
Yes. But the fight continues, and Andarna is the one who said that she needs to be quick, she needs to be careful, because Dane is already unconscious. And yes, at this point, Dane had lost the fight. And I was thinking, because we know that at least we can be agreed that we used to think that Dane has something related with being more powerful because his dad, or because he was on second wing, that maybe they're giving some super potion to get some power or something. Yeah. But it seems now there's more magic than other kind of stuff, because now that he's out on the continent, there's no more magic around. He is just regular human, so he don't have that much power.
Really good spot. Yeah, it's definitely magic, but could it be that they are injecting them with something that allows them to channel more magic without coming from the, like, take more magic from the dragon?
Yeah, that is something that is really interesting to find out what they're doing to maybe, give them a boost of the magic, because, we know the cat give a lot of power, and we think cat is something related to Venom. So it's something that conditioned the body to take more power. But yeah, so far it's all pointing out that Dan is a powerful being, but just from the magic point of view.
Mm.
So, like a venom.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's not venom. He's good. Stop. Let's not go into this again. But if you're interested in hearing our debate about whether Dane is good or bad, you can find a bonus episode if you subscribe on our website via Supercast, or if you subscribe on Spotify and Apple.
Yes, and find out who won.
Yeah, no spoilers. We debated the positives and negatives of a Mr. Dane Atos, and I really enjoyed it. We should do more of those debates.
Oh yeah, definitely. We should do it like random. One day you had to defend to that somebody, and I had to just.
I had to defend like someone Katrina. Really hard to defend, like Daddy Atos. So. Yeah. Katrina, I could do that. Katrina would be a good Katrina. One. Yeah, I think I could. This is a very similar story to Dane, yes. I think. Anyway,
okay.
Moving on.
Going back to the episode.
The actual story, yeah. Dane loses. Mm-hmm. Zayden is about to lose.
Yes.
Costa has him pinned against the wall. He can't do anything. Violet spots this, and Marlies is saying, you can either save him or make me yield. You can't do both.
Yes.
Violet does both. Yeah. She's just like...
Funny thing is that she was like, decision.
Yeah, decisions. And then Violet's like, swap hands, throw the dagger. She's got the knife back at her throat. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That allows Zayden to win. Those two are just a team. Yeah. Such a great team.
I know. And you see how Violet minds works. Because, yes... One of the reasons they chose Dagger is because was Violet's biggest advantage. And obviously, in this case,
team it
was
advantage. Proof.
Yes. Mm. So she saved the situation because without Violet's help, Zayda would be really... He would lose the fight.
I still think that they would have got the audience with the queen because Violet literally made the queen yield. So she's added two. You've won two out of three. So you've earned your right. I think even if only Violet had won. But Violet did win. If we take your theory that Andana's channeling from the sky, which I think, I don't even know if that's a theory now. It's so obvious I can't even believe that I missed it. If we take that as fact, then she used the leverage. She got her into the position.
Mm-hmm.
But the fear of the lightning... was really what did it, wasn't it, in the end?
She yielded after seeing that. And then she was asking to Violet, how do you do that? Because there's no magic here. And Violet was like, it wasn't me. But she's still saying, you broke the...
Yeah, that's been standing there for like...
years.
Yeah.
So Marlin knows there was Violet.
Was it 700 Violet. Years?
Yeah, 700 years.
So before the first six.
Yes.
Interesting. That's got to be interesting.
Something about history that we need to build a little, the timeline.
Yeah, we need Carly's timeline. And just to add on that bit where it says, Umbriel built the steps. 700. Between the 1,000-year-old king and the first six.
The
steps were built. No, if they cut a ribbon or anything. Yeah. Marlies eventually yields and Violet had an upsie. I don't know, like, what she would have done differently. If she'd have known that Marlies was a queen, she could have been... She could have treated her like Auric, basically. Like, no, I don't want to fight you. You're the queen. Mm-hmm. But that wouldn't have earned her an audience. I think she would have still had to have fought because the queen wanted to fight with her. So...
Yeah, that's something weird. When she was saying that, I didn't know that it was you.
I thought you weren't supposed to. That's the point.
Yeah. What she was expecting would be changed if she knew, like, Her Majesty, I'm about to stab her in the wrist, if that's fine with you.
She wouldn't have fought as well, would she? Because she'd have been...
Trying not to hurt her because she needed alliance.
Yeah, yeah. She absolutely needed it to be anonymous. But it turns out that they have not seen the Irid. So she gets her audience with the queen. Auric is not allowed to go and talk. So Violet's like, ew, I hope he forgives me if I give away all the family gold. But the first thing she asks is whether they've seen the seventh breed of dragon. Marlies doesn't even know that they exist. She's like, if they exist, we haven't seen them. I think she's being genuine.
Yes.
She also, we find out in the next chapter, which we won't cover this week, but she only asks for 12 eggs, two of each colour. She doesn't ask for 14 eggs, two of each. Well, it could be because she knows they haven't got any more eggs for the Irids, but I believe her that she didn't know that the Irids existed or that she's heard of them, but they're like a myth. And then we find out that they do have a price, and they would come to Navarre's aid and they would fight with them, but only if they give them dragons.
Yes. So that is the end of the chapter.
It is. I think it's confirmation, like we said at the beginning, that they were the other party in the deal of the Second Crovelish Uprising. And I do think that's significant. But we will leave it there.
Yes.
For this week. So, moving on to my favourite bit of the show, where we cover Oryx auguries. This is the part where we pick our favourite theory for the week. I think I know what yours is going to be. And in the hopes that when book four comes out, we can stitch all these together and we can have a just mad montage of unhinged theories.
Yes.
What's your favourite theory from this week?
So from this episode, my favourite one is the Andarna. She need to change the colour of the scales to channel from the sky. And when she does that, is when she said the magic feels different. And what she means is because it's coming from above.
I love it. I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Fact. It's canon.
It's not theory.
It's the story. It's the story. My favourite theory from this week is that Ten has been to the Isle of Umbriel before, and he accompanied Daddy Sorengale when he took Violet to become dedicated.
Yes. That's something that, obviously, we don't know that much about Ten, but it's another mystery and all the layers that this dragon has.
Yeah. Sticking with the theme of precognition, shall we look at the epigraph for chapter 33? Do not mistake a dragon's bond for fealty. If you expect a dragon to choose their rider over the well-being of their own kind, prepare for two things, disappointment and death. Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind.
Oh, Kaori.
I miss Kaori.
Yes.
This is the book
that so many good moments they have given us in their podcast.
I mean, I want the Fables of the Barons, but I do really, really, really want his Field Guide to Dragonkind. Anyway.
You think he'd been disappointed by the dragon? Something. Do you love me more? No. Oh.
Yeah, he's seen stuff. He's the dragon watcher.
Yeah.
That's what Tan calls him. Okay, so enter the interrogation chamber.
Okay.
You have to take a gift to the King of Deverelli in exchange for access to his island. What are you taking?
Oh. Has to be something from the continent then.
Yeah, I mean, we could do this in two ways. So you can first pick something, it has to be from the continent. You are from Navarre. It's from this world. And then you could pick something like from modern day.
Okay, if it's from the continent, I think something that I can give any, he would be really interested in. It's probably Warwick's journal.
Oh, that's risky. Oh, I think that's riskier than a dragon's egg.
I mean, that journal is full of lies and stuff.
Tells him how to take down the wards.
Yeah.
That is that playing precisely with fire.
That's why you like him more.
Yeah, he will like it, but that you want to be, come on, be tactical. I think she's fucked things up by giving the dragon egg. Oh. Warwick's journal, that is risky.
That's an audience for sure, 100%.
Well, yeah, but you also you'd also like be giving away classified information that would protect the kingdom.
Well, the only thing they said is how to create.
No. Remember what Varys said? Varys said, in the wrong hands, this will tell you how to take down the wards.
True. Okay, let's change it for Lyra.
Lyra's is even more like...
No idea.
Okay. What about from the modern day? I'm not leaving you in charge of any, like, security, by the way, from now on. Like, Bodhi. It's like...
Yeah.
Willy-nilly giving out the family secrets.
Top secrets. Who cares?
I might get you to sign an NDA.
Yeah.
Anything that...
For modern days, probably I will give in some sun cream to keep the skin hydrated and young, because I believe he likes to be young.
Yeah. Again, he's probably already got that. We would find it interesting, yeah. Sorry, this isn't me criticizing. This is me criticizing your gifts.
Okay, what about you then?
So... I think I would take Dragonscale armor. Not because he's got an army and wants an army, and like, but they do because, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just one for him.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd like that.
Mm.
And it's not that dangerous. It'd take a while to make, but you'd get Mira's friend who can make big things really tiny. Yeah, I think Dragonscale armor would be good enough, but also wouldn't.
I don't think you would get an audience, because...
It's unique. There's never been any before. Violet's is the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Mira's been trying to tell her leadership to make some, but... No, I think I'd get it. He could, like...
I mean, it's useful if you're a warrior, but for a king like him, you need to go to him, and he had a lot of guards around.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to necessarily keep all this stuff. He could trade that for something good. He could trade that with Umbriel. Umbriel will be all over that.
Collective, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's why the queen wanted her to take it off, so she could pinch it. Not that it would fit anyone, because they're all like absolute beefcakes. But,
yeah,
I'll take the Dragonscale armor. And from modern day, this is really weird, but I think I'd take him a helium balloon. I think he'd have quite a lot of fun. I don't know why I find that image so funny. He'd be like, what is this? Oh my god, thank you, yes. Just something like that you would never have seen before. I'd be like, what is this magic?
Yes. Magic's coming from
it doesn't matter how old you are, 1,000 years, it's still funny when you breathe helium. Okay, should we move on to the question for this week?
Yes.
If you had to fight for an audience with one person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do it alive or dead?
Alive or all person, time?
Alive. One person currently alive.
Okay, yeah, currently alive.
If you had to fight for an audience with one person who is currently living in the world, who would that be?
Really good question. I like it.
For the person... For some reason, didn't want to see you.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to fight.
You had to fight, and then you get a moment with this person to ask anything. Rebecca Yarros.
To ask anything? Or to... She would just say, I'm not telling you, go away.
Yeah, it's just for my podcast. Nobody...
Yeah. So I'm not telling you, go away. No, it doesn't even have to be ask a question. It could be like, tell them something.
Yeah, just have a chat.
Mm.
Okay.
So, thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Faithfully Fantasy Pod. We're most active on Instagram. We do also have a Discord though, so come and join the conversation. We'd love to hear your theories. So if you've got a theory, send it our way. We always try to give you the credit that you deserve on the show and on socials, because let's be honest, the best theories come from all of you.
And with this, we have just one more thing to say. Thank you for listening to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast, talking all things Onyx Storm.
We'll see you next week with more theories, more deep dives, and of course, with more Faithfully Fantasy.
Bye.